welcome to Red Ice Radio. Wherever you are in the world, thank you for stopping by redicecreations.com and tuning in to our internet talk radio program, where we address interesting, important, controversial, and thought-provoking topics. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and we are coming to you from Gothenburg, Sweden. Today we have Kurt Lindahl back with us on the program to do a follow-up show on geomancy that we spent an hour on early in June. Kurt has some new theories, he has made some new discoveries, the ties in Rome, Constantinople, the Vatican, and also the Egyptians to this story. We're going to talk about longitude and latitude discoveries, or when that was initiated, so to speak, the idea about that. We have an awful lot to talk about. Kurt has been busy on his blog, survivalcell.blogspot.com, and we are going to follow up on the last program we did and dive into some of this new material here this afternoon or this evening. But Kurt, welcome back to the program. Really nice to have you on again.
Well, thanks, Henrik. It's great to be here, and I'm excited to talk to you this morning. And thanks to everybody who's contacted me out there, and everybody's been really nice, and it's just been great to be with you all on Red Ice.
Wonderful. Thanks, Kurt. I'm really looking forward to diving into some of this new material here today with you. Maybe we can do a quick little recap, though, of some of the things that we talked about. One thing that I was interested in, again, in kind of, I guess, clearing out an issue is in regards to how you draw up the lines, how you make a connection, so to speak, let's say between two cities or something like that. We talked last time about that you're primarily using Google Earth and so forth. Do you do like a page dump and draw lines with it, or do you use some kind of tool in order to link up one city to another one, or how do you approach this?
Yeah, you can use the measuring tool that's included there with Google Earth that gives you a distance and bearing of anything. They have another tool that's a line tool that you can do that will just give you a distance along any angle you want to go. So the bearing tool and distance tool gives you the shortest distance and bearing, or any angle that you want to measure with it too. So if you're using like an element of a monument that may point somewhere, you kind of figure out which bearing it's pointing to. And this is all with the latitude and longitude grid as north. And then I just pull the line out and see what's along it.
And then
you just survey it using Google Earth, zooming in on things, using the information that they have available and all the cities and geographic information they include.
So, and do that when you do that, does that include like the curvature of the Earth as well? Or is this like if you would have laid the map out flat and draw a line between it? Do you know how that works?
Yes, I do. And the tool that actually does that for you. Oh. That you're pulling. It's like giving you a compass bearing from the point you're measuring from.
I see. And last time, of course, we were primarily focusing in on Thomas Jefferson's line, so to speak, his township grid and so forth. But since then, you've pretty much gone into this whole other area in regards to the potential roots of this, I guess. I guess we can begin talk a little bit about where you think this stems from to begin with. You discover something in regards to the Egyptians, that they developed latitude and longitude. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Now, this is my theory. I'm just supposing this. No one else is, you know, I think other people have kind of suggested that they thought this must exist because the pyramids are oriented to true north. And let me speak again to the measuring tool in Google Earth, because that's going to come into the story here too. The angles that's given you are measured with regard to latitude and longitude. So grid north and true north are very close. So you know, they're pretty much interchangeable for our purposes here, just to generally describe ley lines and things like that. But what I noticed was what started me thinking that the Egyptians may have had a form of latitude and longitude is the fact that I had vectored the northeast facet of the pyramid, that angle out, and it seemed to intersect with the ruins at Baalbek. I mean, I could even stretch that and say that it matches the facet of the hexagon in the ruins of Baalbek. It seems to at about 45.55 degrees. You know, you can move these things around a little bit and make it do what you want to do. I just noticed that it matched, and it matches the angle really, really close to the way that structure is built too. And others have supposed that these two structures are related. Sitchin, for instance, he is a linguist that has done a lot of work that we all, you know, you may have heard of him before.
Sure. Yeah.
In Sumeria, and he supposes that the pyramids and Baalbek and Mount Ararat form a line by which the Anunnaki had a landing site, you know. So he noticed this connection. Others like Graham Hancock and Boval noted the 45-degree angle orientation of the pyramids themselves, and this all fits into this. Other people are noticing this angular association too, and really – it is very close to being a perfect 45-degree angle. And that just speaks to how well the pyramids are laid out right there. It speaks to the mystery of how did the Egyptians know they oriented their structures towards the pole that's in the middle of the ocean. How did they know this? It's a basic mystery that people have supposed before.
Yes.
So I started looking at this relationship, and I noticed that the distance between the two also was about 407 miles by my measurement on Google Earth.
And do you think that Baalbek is the first site where everything stems from, or do you think that the pyramids in Egypt is the origin of this? What do you think?
Well, I think the pyramids were there first is what most people believe, and that's kind of where I'm proceeding from. But it's possible that the things you read about Baalbek, too, also do suggest that there could have been several temples there prior to the remains that are there now that may or may not have involved the large trilithon stones that are there that are a mystery also, how those were moved there.
Mm-hmm.
Those are could be the largest cut stones in the world, largest man-made stones ever made. And I'm not claiming to notice this relationship of the two places. I just noticed it from pulling the lines on Google Earth.
It's very interesting, though. You know?
So, yeah, the association just seems such a coincidence. When I first found it, I was just like, there's no way,
yeah.
You know, I couldn't believe it. And everybody there at home too, if you're listening, go to Google Earth and give this a try. Just put the line tool there on the southwest corner of the Great Pyramid. And even if the image they have up there doesn't show you where the pyramid would be from plan view, just connect the two corners and you can usually get a pretty fair, you know, angle from that, or just go that 45.55, and if you pull it to Lebanon, to Baalbek, you'll see if you match it to the facet of the hexagon, it'll match it at within 45 degree to 46 degrees.
Do you think that this could be made by surveying from the Earth or on the Earth, or does this imply that they had to have some kind of aerial perspective in order to get this, or do you think you can do it from Earth by measuring correctly?
Yes, it could be done from Earth. I think we'd all would love to, you know, think that the Sumerians came in with the spacecraft and did it and everything like that, but it is entirely possible to have they could have gone overland and surveyed that way if they had skills at that. I mean, there's no evidence that they even had a compass, but the fact that they're orienting their buildings the way they did suggests that they did. So they could have surveyed overland 90 degrees to a point where they were 90 degrees south of Baalbek and then surveyed their way to there. But it's incredibly accurate. The angle matches, the 45 degree angle, and it's about 407 miles. So when I examine this spatial relationship, I just started thinking in terms of a hypotenuse.
And what is that for people who don't know?
And that is the diagonal measurement of a square or a rectangle.
Mm.
from which, you know, you, obviously you, that's a model for the square or rectangle itself. You can draw a square or rectangle just from a diagonal line by just, you know, connecting the square angles around the ends of the line.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I started looking at that, and I realized that it seemed to match a 4-degree north-south by 5-degree east-to-west block of longitude, block of lat long that we use today on maps, or it was very close. I'm not claiming that it was, it perfectly matches what we have today, but it's close enough that it's possible that this is what they were using it for.
Hmm.
The angle certainly matches it. The location of the pyramid is neither on a perfect line of latitude or longitude, but it's very close to being even in both, and so is Baalbek. And my thoughts with this distortion was, well, if they had surveyed over land or marked it in by some terrestrial means, that there could be a little bit of error involved. But it also got me thinking that the purpose of the whole thing was to orient everything with the pyramids, whether they knew where true north or south was or not. My thought was, well, possibly they valued making everything square with the pyramids, and it wasn't to true north. And I just had another wild thought, too, that at the time that maybe the pyramids were built using a compass at a point when true north matched magnetic north.
Yes, because that's changing a little bit all the time, I guess, and magnetic north is very difficult to pinpoint, but what you're talking about is that at a time when they built the pyramids, or at least aligned it, they did so towards what at that point was true north, right?
Exactly, or that's what we consider that today. Mm. But if at the time they built the structures, the magnetic pole was at that point that we define as true north today, which I think is within the realm of possibility. If you look at the globe and the way and the charts of the way the poles wander, you can see that it could match.
Hmm.
So, I mean, it's a slim possibility, but my thought was, well, then we had this cultural affectation, or subsequent cultures to the Egyptians, and the Egyptians and the self-valued squaring things with the pyramids, not even thinking that it was true north or having defined that to themselves, because possibly this was magnetic north to them anyway.
Yeah.
So that's possible. But it's just a thought, and I throw things out there sometimes that, you know, that just gets you thinking. And I'm not saying all this is absolutely true, but some of it can be inferred from what you look at on the map.
Well, absolutely. And what you've done is that you've drawn up these lines in Google Earth, and as you said, anyone can do it for themselves. And how much would you say it potentially differs? Is that something that you can tell in Google Earth as well? Let's say that you draw up a line, and can you tell if it's a few, you know, feet off or a couple of hundred feet, or how much are we talking about approximately here? Maybe that's difficult to say.
Well, I mean, the little guides they give you on there go to zero, but I mean, I'm sure there's some. It must be. I know even with accurate GPS equipment, sometimes it's hard to get sub-meter accuracy. I'm sure the imagery that we're getting with Google Earth has some amount of distortion.
Mm.
With regard to the pyramids in Baalbek, though, even on Google Earth, there's a way you can check different imagery right there on Google Earth. If you go into the view, there's a history tab you can click on. And it brings up a slider with different dates of images that are available of what you're looking at that time.
Yeah.
So you can even find a better shot of the pyramids that is more from plan view if you want to sketch out the lines I'm talking about and see for yourself how close they are and have a look at it. I mean, Google Earth's just fun to get on there and gee whiz, if nothing else, I hope from everybody listening to me, they go on there and just mess around with it and learn something there.
Yeah, absolutely. Play around with it. And again, if we look at the Baalbek, you have obviously an awful lot of good pictures on your blog, survivalcell.blogspot.com, where people can scroll down on any post and look at some of these pictures. And one of them is, of course, over the hexagon of Baalbek that we talked about. And basically, we have six lines drawn out from that. And we talked about one of these lines connect them with the Great pyramid, but tell us about some of the other lines. You have drawn them up in different colors, obviously, which makes it more easier, but there are definitely interesting connection in regards to some of the cities that come up in relation to some of these lines. Tell us about that, Kurt.
It is. I mean, there's just something about this structure that's always been valued. We know, Kaiser Wilhelm back in the pre-World War I days valued it. There's a plaque there. There's even some references I've read to them using Baalbek as the center of a map projection, which is a datum to draw a map from, on the world.
All right.
So there's always value through history of this place, and I just started looking at it in the terms that I was looking at some of the structures over here in the States with about how they can point lines to places. So I started vectoring out the directions that the facets of the hexagon pointed.
Yes.
And again, these points you're measuring are like compass points as if you were standing right there. If you pull it, 100 miles away and try to pull the same compass bearing, it's going to take you a different direction than you were going from before. So you have to pull from your datum spot.
Mm.
So I pulled all those out and measured them, and there is a picture there on the blog of it, and they all seem to go to in the vicinity of some historically interesting places, and of course the pyramids are there. And if that line continues to the northeast, we have Mount Ararat up there in Turkey. There's a big peak of Mount Ararat and then a smaller volcano near it, and the line seems to go right between the two there.
And I think Mount Ararat was one of these places where, well, for a while at least, they considered this to be the spot where Noah's Ark pretty much landed, I guess we can say.
Yeah, that it has all kinds of significance in the Bible and Gnostic studies, and also this region of Turkey near Lake Van. There is also some references I've read to Jewish tribes being from that region, and are occupying that region, and other cultures too that are of interest. And that whole area up there is volcanic, and Lake Van is interesting too. It's a great salt lake too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an interesting Nimrudag is up there, which is a very interesting site also. That's not on the line, it's near it. But that's just a lot of interesting things on that vector. And then if you stretch it all the way up to Kazakhstan, it's near the city of Astana.
Mm-hmm.
Which, Tex Mars has pointed out, he researches occult monuments also, that they're building this vast array of new geomantic structures there, including pyramids and all kinds of interesting towers. They have this really, really interesting stadium there that looks like a UFO with a big see-through top to it. That's a big tower with a light on it. You all have to go online, or there's some pictures of that in the video, one of the videos I have on YouTube also.
Interesting. What was the name again of the city or area?
It's called Astana, Astana, and it's in Kazakhstan.
Astana, interesting. And do you know if this was one of the places where there was somewhere in Russia, one of the former states of the Soviet Union, where they were building a big glass type pyramid structure. Do you know if that's the one, or if this is another one that you're referring to?
It could be the one that you're thinking about too. The gentleman who built the pyramid that's in Astana has also built, I think, a few other ones in the former Soviet republics also.
Mm.
But he did build the one that's in the array there, too. And the man who designed it is an English architect. And I don't have his name right in front of me right now. But it seemed from what Tex Mars is writing about that place, it's a Masonic city. There's a lot of orientation towards that there. There's a lot of energy resources in the region up there. And this just whole new city is being built of towers. And they have a whole plaza that's very modern looking and space age geomantic array compared to a lot of the older things you see you know, on the Earth. So it's kind of interesting to look at. There's lots of articles online about that, and I do briefly mention it in one of the videos that I have on YouTube.
It's for those who are listening here, it's actually Norman Foster who built this the pyramid, and he's of course a famous architect which done a lot of work in London as well. But they call this place, I think that you're referring to, Palace of Peace and Reconciliation, or Pyramid of Peace, actually. And they have this really
That's it, right?
And they have this very, very interesting picture of it as well, where the Pyramid of Peace is lit up in different colors. Really, really interesting. Different lights, red, yellow, blue, and green. So people can check out that. I'm going to add a link to that so people can take a look at it. Very interesting.
Yeah, it is just fascinating that they're really just building this from the ground up, and it's all venerations of older structures, and I'm sure they're all built with sacred geometry and all the mantic array and everything. So it's kind of interesting to see what they're doing with that.
Absolutely. Then you have another line that goes, if we talk about the green line from Baalbek, the hexagon, which actually seems to cross over Carthage, which again is an important site if we think about the Council of Carthage, actually, where some of the it's like a second council after Council of Nicaea, I guess, when they did some kind of refinement, so to speak, of the biblical text, pretty much.
Well, there's that, and then there's just the succession in the cultures, the way they've moved around, you know, from Phoenicia to Carthage, and the Roman aspects of Carthage too. It's even the line coming from Baalbek is kind of symbolic or talismanic, because that some anthropologists and archaeologists believe the culture went from Phoenicia to Carthage and then possibly to Rome. The culture that may contain this group of people that we're kind of in search of here, that do the geomancy and really value these structures beyond what the public does. So that is a very interesting line. I mean, there's so much history in Carthage, and that if you even look today on Google Earth and look at Carthage, you can see the remains of the war harbor. And it's around that they dug it into the waterfront there, and they used to have an array of temples and structures there too, and it's just, it's really unique and interesting to look at that. If you all get a chance there, look at Carthage on Google Earth. And that, so that's one of the successions of cultures, why it's interesting that the line goes there.
So it's almost like that potentially here, just a thought I got, is that they potentially are building this is like a starting point for civilization, pretty much, this hexagonal shape in Baalbek, and then they've built different structures, monuments, and cities according to, if you vector these lines out, at different times. And Astana that we talked about might just be the latest version of this, so to speak, right?
Yes, that's true. Or today it may have evolved into a sect of people who just value having their new buildings associated with that.
Yes.
Because if you follow the northwest trending facet of the Great Pyramid, the line seems to go right near the pyramid in Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if you follow that line at the angle that it starts at, it's another 45-degree angle. It's 315 degrees. And if you pull it all the way to Memphis, Tennessee, it's, I think, within about a mile of the pyramid-shaped arena in Memphis.
How about that?
It doesn't go right to it or anything. I couldn't make it do that. But it seems to me, I mean, this man, here we go back to Tex Mars again. He's discussed the gentleman who built that arena is the owner of the Hard Rock Cafe franchise. And there's rumors, some of the things you read on the internet and stuff, that he actually spent the night in the Great Pyramid and had an experience while he was there, and was told to build this pyramid in Memphis.
Oh, really? How about that?
I think that's what he tells people, why he built the pyramid. And it's a civic arena where they have sporting events and concerts and things like that.
Huh. And how about, there's another one in Sacramento, right, which also connects. Is that with the Great Pyramid, or is that with the Baalbek Hexagon?
That seems to. I mean, from the imagery that's on Google Earth, if you go to Teotihuacan in Mexico, near Mexico City, to the Pyramid of the Sun, and it's the northwest trending facet of that pyramid. If you trace a line at that angle from that point, it ends up in Sacramento.
Sacramento. Okay, so it's between Teotihuacan and Sacramento that's connection is.
Yeah, I can't remember the angle right now. But that it takes you right to the building, it seems to.
Interesting.
So, you know, it is interesting. If you're using that angle anywhere along that point, closer or farther away, it won't work. But from the datum point, it works.
So all these pyramids have relationships with each other in relation to how they build them and how they line up, which is very interesting because, again, it seems to be that at least the architects, those who drop these plans, have a conscious idea that they want it in some way to connect with another pyramid structure on the Earth.
Yeah, there's one in Turkey also.
Okay.
It's directly north of the Great Pyramid. In Antalya, Turkey, there's a plaza and pyramid there that seems to be aligned with the Great Pyramid at a north-south relationship. So, yeah, there seems to be a modern value of people, whether it's just, hey, this is cool, let's do it, or to me, it seems to go beyond that. But there's a trend, yeah. It seems to be that people value these vectors even today.
Yes. So do you think that that's done for, again, geomantic purposes, that this is in some way creating an energetically charged, if you will, grid pattern across the Earth, or have you thought about this, of why they're doing it?
Yes. Well, I think if nothing else, it's symbolic.
Yeah.
It's just saying, look, we did this, or we're part of this, or we caused this. This is part of your heritage, you know, or this is part, you are part of our heritage. It's just symbolic, if nothing else, if there are no real functions of these monuments and arrays and everything like that. If nothing else, it's to serve in the mind of people what's going on. And then we've all read a lot about how the occult symbolism has many different meanings, and many of the monuments record sacred geometry and really practical things, as well as the hidden meanings.
Yes.
And what they mean to Gnostic groups or whatever, they still mean things to the public beyond that, obviously. So, you know,
that's right.
I think it's symbolic, and there is a group of people that believes that they do things.
Yeah.
We can't forget that. I mean, it's possible. I don't discount. I can't prove that they can't, just as well as many of them can't prove that they can do something. But that belief is there, and even if it's true or not, the fact that people believe it and behave as if things really happen is an important factor.
Absolutely, that's what
we're talking. Let's take the other direction towards Mecca. There's one of the vectors does go to Mecca. And when I looked at that, obviously the religion originally worshipped at Baalbek, the Sumerian, you know, worshipping of the tree or the tree of life, all the images we see of this in Sumerian art and Babylonian art that Islam rejects. You know, this is part of the things that they say in their doctrine. We rejected worshipping the tree and everything. So maybe them placing Mecca or choosing Mecca as their place to be the holy city is a symbolic rejection of that.
Yeah, because that was Mecca was one of the later cities. I think the main headquarters for where Islam kind of sprung up was Medina, if I'm not mistaken, and they later on moved it to Mecca. So that could have been done, so to speak, by the more those in the more occult
in the know
in the know, so to speak. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, it does exist in the Islamic world. It's easy to look at any mosque with the minarets and domed structures and everything and tell that they have a value of it.
Yeah.
that I'm just starting to delve into that. That's one of the other aspects I'm going to get to in the next volume of Geomantic Information Systems, is looking at some of the Eastern cultures a little bit more. I got interested in Thomas Jefferson, and it kind of consumed me here this time. So
yes, and what we also can mention, I guess, is that in relation to Mecca and particularly the Kaaba in Mecca, is that some of the stories at least tell that the stone that they have inside of the Kaaba is this black stone, which allegedly fell from the sky or the heaven. There's some kind of extraterrestrial connection, so to speak, with that stone that they have stored or lodged inside the Kaaba. So that's also an interesting side note to all of this.
Yeah, there's those that suppose it's a meteorite or does have some quality, and that's why Muslims venerate it. Also, its association with their beliefs and everything else, obviously, but maybe it is possible that it does something. It's part of their beliefs to make the Hajj or pilgrimage there.
Yeah.
And that's a big event in the life of a Muslim, to make the Hajj.
Absolutely.
So you're right. They're all there, drawn there in a way, whether it's for, you know, philosophical reasons or some actual reason, would be interesting to see.
Absolutely. And if we continue on that, the green line that we talked about, which goes through Carthage, we have, if we follow that line, we come up to the Straits of Gibraltar, correct?
Yeah, and this is just practical directional tool here, possibly, that it says, look, here's the way out of the Mediterranean. You know, I mean, that's another thing we can't forget. It just points directions to go to places. And all this, too, is supposing, obviously, that people in this age had a compass. A lot of people don't believe that this is true or not, but it seems from some of the spatial relationships we're seeing that they had to have something.
Yeah.
To help them lay all this out. I mean, it's also, let me note while we're talking, it's just what kind of spurred my imagination in all of this with concerning Baalbek is also its orientation almost exactly on the 34th parallel.
Yes.
You know, it's like 34 degrees, 0 minutes, and I think 20 some odd seconds, which is just, I'm like, wow, here's just one of the most interesting, oldest structures in the world. And it sits on an even line of a grid that we use in the modern world.
Yeah.
So that just seemed curious, and it got me thinking about all this. And I think it is possible that they use this as a design, as a latitude and longitude grid of some type. And beyond that, too, my another thing that spurred my imagination was the hexagonal shape.
Yes.
And after, you know, along the line from the pyramid to the hexagonal shape there at Baalbek, I noticed that approximately every 100 miles equaled an even line of latitude.
Hmm.
That's how I started to think, oh, this is a model for, you know, latitude and longitude, because it's just such an even distribution of, you know, where each line of latitude was.
Yeah.
And also, each structure is close to being at an even line of longitude. They're neither one of them is exact, but as I say, if they were measuring overland somehow at 90-degree angles or 45-degree angles, which the Egyptians may have valued also, there might have been some distortion. But the angular association of the two places is just really fascinating.
What role do you think astronomy and even astrology play into this, the idea that cities have alignments in accordance to astronomical places in the sky or stars or kind of an alignment grid that exists up in the sky in some way has been mirrored down on Earth. Everyone knows, of course, about the most famous one about the Belt of Orion and the pyramids and so forth in Egypt. But there is other research that seem to point that other cities are aligned to stars and astronomical aligned grids. What do you think, Kurt?
I think it's entirely possible and probable. One of my thoughts when I first started to to look into the Thomas Jefferson and how he had a hand in developing the township grid and the reasons for it. A thought crossed my mind that he was arraying cities as in some pattern that was astrologically significant. Hmm. I don't know enough about that to look into it and find out, but I'm working on getting that information, and it would be really interesting because it also just supports again that the occult concept of as above, so below, that we see repeated so much in a lot of occult readings and people referring to that. So yeah. In mapping, that concept is really, you know, possible to display in things you're doing on a map or a grid if you know about it. So as above, so below can take on different meanings when you're thinking about it in those terms.
Absolutely. I think I want to get into the Romans a little bit here later. I want to, in our next hour, talk a little bit more about the Vatican primarily and Rome's connection to all of this as well. There's a few other lines that you've discovered in relationship to that. But one thing I can read is some research that was done by, let's see here, I don't have his name now, but it was done by someone at Cornell University in New York, Ithaca, that have studied ancient Roman towns pretty much, and by mm-hmm. using astronomically aligned grids, and he came pretty much to the conclusion. I have this this article up on redasscreations.com, and I'm going to link up that so people can read more about that for themselves. But he came to that conclusion that pretty much all of the Roman ancient cities in some way had alignments to star patterns. So it's right there, you know. It's very, very interesting.
Sure, and that speaks to, like, how did they, if they had a goal to do that, how did they go about obtaining it, even within some tolerance of degree of error?
Yeah,
they exactly. had to have had some knowledge of it, and possibly it was a knowledge of reading the stars.
Because one idea that comes up, of course, is that there have been knowledge about this for a long time, coming from the ancient world, but specifically during the Middle Ages, so to speak, and when a lot of Western Europe and so forth was controlled under the Vatican, a lot of this knowledge was suppressed, which implies to us that no one before this could have known anything about it. But again, it just implies that those who built cities in and around Italy and Rome before that had this knowledge, and it was later removed in some way from when we got a more Catholic rule. Do you think that's a possibility?
I think that's a possibility, and I still think really I can only speak to what the United States is like today, but that's still a very controlled thing, just property. You know, I mean, to 99.9% of us listening to this, probably just how to divide it up, how to do it, who's doing it. It's a controlled secret, and that always has been privileged information.
Yes.
How to navigate on the earth. And that's why I think, in terms of, maybe the Egyptians did know these orientations and measurements, and the Romans and Phoenicians subsequently also, because you just see evidence of it in the way the cities are laid out and things like that.
Well, that's a good...
I mean, it even... Go
yeah.
ahead.
Oh no, I just want to say this. I think that's a good point, actually, to take into these theories that we're talking about. That by potentially going to one of these monuments, you can get, if you have the inner knowledge, so to speak, the secret knowledge of how to get to other places on Earth or important towns or cities or sites, you can study, for instance, the hexagon then at Baalbek and know that, okay, if I follow this line, vector this line, I can go to Carthage. If I follow this line, I can go to the Great Pyramid, pretty much, and you can figure your way out. It's a way of navigating on the earth, much as they do on the oceans, right?
Exactly. Well, what I began to do also was with Baalbek is I drew each facet, a line from each facet out to 200 miles in length, and I made a template. And I started thinking of that in terms of the old Roman terms of how these things were established. And basically, they had a geomancer.
Yeah.
They had an augur that would come establish the gnomon or center point of the templum. I mean, there you even have that word. Cartographers today use templates.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, there's that small connection, too. So I started to see Baalbek like it, as a form of it, of this hexagonal template you could make. And I saw the, how the along the relationship between the pyramids and the ruins at Baalbek, the even latitude at every approximate 100-mile distance along that angle. So I took the template and set it up over Athens, just oriented towards magnetic north, just as how it seems to be at Baalbek. And the associations worked again. So if you went along the 45-degree angle, the same, you know, divisions could be used. Now, you might say to yourself, well, 100 miles is a long way. How can they do that? The fact is, if they knew that those relationships, they can use that whole logic on a smaller scale, too.
Yeah, it's scalable, right? So you can do it in any scale.
But this all depends on having a compass. So there's that argument somebody else could make. Well, we don't know that they even had that. So there is that problem.
Yes.
In the whole thing. I believe they did, though.
It seems obvious
that there's something going on where they and you touched on this. That may have been a hidden or seemed to be magic to people who weren't aware of it.
Sure, of course.
Or they didn't know what it was. I mean, we have to think in terms of the age we're at, where I mean, this is where the tradition of knowledge being associated with the occult and
power, right? Knowledge.
Yeah,
is power.
This is where it all comes from, exactly. And all this exclusive culture that developed around this to manipulate it and make it benefit them only.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things I know we're concerned with that's motivated me in my writing a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be objective, but I keep seeing this pattern of manipulation and secrecy. Of things that could be for the public good, but apparently weren't. I mean, we're talking the Egyptians here may have known this grid.
Yeah, yeah.
Now there's no really recorded knowledge of one existing from what I've read. You know, if somebody out there knows anything about this, let me know. But it's the Greeks later seem to be the first ones credited with having this grid or using it in this fashion.
Right. And that's the official story, of course. But I think, as you say, Court, it goes back way, way further back than that, you know. And
well, you've got the pyramids, Baalbek, and, you know, the location of Istanbul today is near a really even line, Athens. You know, so there's a lot of old cities that are on even lines of latitude and longitude.
That's right.
Could be a coincidence, but it does seem like there's something at work.
Well, I think so, absolutely. I mean,
I agree.
Another line that you've drawn up is, for instance, between the Great Pyramid and the Pisa Tower, Tower of Pisa?
Yeah, that again, that's the same line that goes to the pyramid in Memphis, Tennessee, or near that, and it goes near Pisa. It doesn't go right over the Tower of Pisa, but it seems to go over the city and through the Tuscany region, you know, where all the literary things. I can't remember the city right off my, where they have the Palio, right off the top of my head. But
are you talking U.S. Just, U.S. now, or where are you?
No, in Italy.
In Italy, okay. Can't remember that.
I can't remember. It's not. That's just a minor point, but it's just a very colorful region of Italy, and it also. It's funny. There is a photo on Google Earth of Dragonara Castle.
All right.
Italy, and the line seems to go right over that, and I just thought that was kind of intriguing.
A little side note there. Dragonara's Castle, is that the one?
Yeah, Dragonara Castle, so the dragon reference is right there.
That's interesting. Yeah. Well, could be a reference to the dragon, what is known as the dragon line or something like that. I don't know if it's if the dragon line is something somewhere else, but I know that one of these lines as well.
No, those are known. They all are. Yeah, you can really use that term for any of them.
Okay. The dragon lines. All right. Interesting.
Yeah.
How about the Eiffel Tower, Stonehenge, connection with the Great Pyramid as well, or are they just close?
Well,
to the vicinity?
There could be one that could be extrapolated. I did notice that, you know, if you're viewing on Google Earth again the Nile Delta, obviously it looks like a delta or inverted triangle. It's so green it sticks out from the desert colors there. And I noticed the distribution of the city of Alexandria and Port Said seemed kind of equidistant from the Great Pyramid. So on a whim, I vectored out lines from those, and they were both about 111 miles from the tip of the Great Pyramid.
Mm.
So both cities, at least points within them, you can find that I used the old location of the lighthouse in Alexandria.
Okay.
Mm. For the way I vectored that line. And then I just pulled it out to see where it went, and it went all through the classical parts of Greece, where I'm sure you can't just drop a coin somewhere and find another old one or some archaeological site of some kind.
Right.
But it did go to Stonehenge along that line and that angle.
Mm.
And it pretty much went right to it. You know, at that scale, when you get down to it and start moving the line, a quarter of a mile either side of Stonehenge, it barely moves the gauge of the angle that you're pulling. So you can use your imagination a little bit, but it went very close to that.
How much have you looked at Britain? Have you had time to look at that at all, or do you plan to do that later on?
Yes, I'm going to do. There's been so much done there. They've kind of defined this whole study, I think, haven't they?
There's so many sites there. It's just incredible. Yeah.
Yeah, the Alfred Watkins, the first guy there to define what a ley line was, basically looking at the Neolithic sites. And there's even a few Brits out there, I think, that get a little peeved if we call anything else a ley line. So I apologize to them, but it seems to be the best.
Right.
It seems to be the best term that applies to these alignments.
Right.
So, but no, I was reading just the other day, there's a man that's doing very similar work to what I'm doing, but in Scotland.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And he has a website called Mythomorphs.
Okay, Mythomorphs.
And he's got a lot of interesting things to say, and it's funny because they have islands there in Scotland that have these vaguely pyramidal structures on it that are valued in heraldry and Scottish lore.
Yes.
And I forget what Mr. Fayed's first name is, but the famous man who owns Harrods in London just bought one of these islands.
It's Al Fayed, isn't it? Simply.
Al Fayed, excuse me, yes.
Yeah.
So I think he just purchased one of these for who knows what reason. It's interesting that they're valued from a Masonic standpoint. They're part of alignments that create pyramids and such.
Well, yeah.
And then, yeah, so he I think he made a symbolic purchase of the there's no really practical use for the island either. It's just a rock.
Well, he is totally obsessed with Egypt, that's for sure. When we were in London recently, we were in actually in Harrods. Never thought I would find myself in there, but anyway, there we were. Mm-hmm. And he has, of course, the Egyptian section, so to speak, inside the shopping mall or the store, and it's just incredible. They have I think even his face on some of them or something like that. It was some kind of connection where he had placed himself as a kind of a pharaoh or whatever. But it was just incredible how much Egyptian symbolism was inside Herod. So he knows, and he has some interest in that, let me tell you.
Well, I'm sure he must have read, too, some of the things that I'm seeing that's linking the culture that built Stonehenge to the Egyptians somehow. There's a few people out there touting theories like that, because the relative construction dates of some of the Neolithic or the structures like Stonehenge and everything are similar to construction dates in Egypt and don't match the known dates of Druidry per se in England.
Court, why don't we begin here to round things up for the first hour? I want to continue talking more with you in our member section, primarily about the Vatican, some of the sites in Rome and how the Vatican lines up with other sites that we've talked about already. There's lots more to go into, but before we run things up, we can mention that you're currently working on a book about the subject, and go ahead and mention your website again for us so people know where to go when this is finally going to be out there and available for us.
Yeah, I'm at survivalcell.blogspot.com. And it's called Geomantic Information Systems. It's right there. It comes up if you enter that address. And I have a YouTube channel also called Survival Cell, where I'm putting some stuff up. And And just everybody also, I'd like asked to be patient too. You know, it's some of the stuff's a work in progress, so yes. I'm not perfect or anything.
Well, that's so, what it's about, Court. You know,
yeah, researching kind of what I'm trying to do is share what I'm discovering with everybody.
Yes,
so they can, you know, experience it along with me. You know, so it's just kind of a hobby, really, and it's fun to do.
Very, very fun, and we're discovering very interesting stuff about the ancient past, the correlation to even what's going on today, and that the system seems to be ongoing. So, Cord, we'll take a short break here. We'll listen to some music, and then we'll return and talk more in our member section. So again, people, check out survivalcell.blogspot.com and the YouTube account Survival Cell, and we will see you on the other side. Stay with us, Cord. We'll talk more soon.
All right, thank you.
More with Court Lindahl coming up in our second hour about the Vatican, hexagons, octagonals, the International Peace Garden, ritual murders and human sacrifice on specific sites, and the 33rd parallel. We'll also talk more about Williamsburg and primarily about the history of the College of William and Mary in Virginia. We'll talk about the gallows there and also about the hanging of Blackbeard, the pirate, at that site. So join us at redicecreations.com. Click on subscribe if you're not yet a member. And tune into our second hour. You'll get instant access. You can sign up with us for 3 months for only about 11 euro cents per day. And you'll get full access to our archives. And check out our recent interview, video interview that we did with Adrian Gilbert. We recently did that in London at the AV2 conference. He's the co-author of The Orion Mystery. And we discussed the Invisible College and the Orion Stargate. Don't miss it. Okay, we'll enjoy some music and we'll be right back after this.